You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey everybody, it's Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, so we should probably slow down on the Easter candy. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, joined by Michael F. Florio and Laquan Jones. And gentlemen, it's nice to have you both on the West Coast at the same time. It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, man. Everybody's traveling. You ain't got no plans set up soon, Marcus?
I mean, I may be going somewhere, but you know, I mean, my homeland is up north. Like, I'm not going east necessarily. We may make a trip, make a pilgrimage back to the Bay Area, but nothing immediately planned. I just had mom in town, so.
The furthest east we're going to get Marcus this summer is Canton.
Oh, my yeah. God. That was the closest you'll get to good pizza, too, man.
Is it? Okay, sure. It's funny because I know all East Coast, like, yeah, you miss out on good pizza. I'm like, yeah, but we got burritos and tacos, and like that's a fair trade-off. I feel like that's trade-off. It is.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that stuff until I came over here, and I actually do enjoy it. So, you know, big plus for California.
Welcome. We have plenty to talk about today. Excited because this is one of my favorite shows that we do every year. We're going to have Emory Hunt on. The founder, the creator of the Football Game Plan. His draft guide is out now. So we're going to dive into sort of his draft process, talk about some of the guys he likes. Florio, you and I were talking about this before the show, that one of the reasons we like Emory is because, he will always highlight a couple of guys that maybe we either haven't heard of or haven't really talked much about, or he will have something in his rankings that kind of has us scratching our heads. But the beauty of it, Mike, is that more often than not, Emory is right on a lot of these things.
I'm going to age both of us. I remember when I first started working with Emory like 7 years ago, I was like, this guy's crazy. Like the amount of names that he has against consensus and the guys that like we've never heard of that go to these small schools. And then the season plays out and like you're like, oh, Tariq Cohen is an RB2 for fantasy purposes. No one had heard the name before Emory was throwing it out there. So yeah, genius, doesn't care at all about consensus. And even better than that, he is not only watching all of these players, Marcus, like he's in person traveling to all these small schools and everything and watching these guys play live. So even if you don't agree with Emory, you should 100% listen and take what he says seriously.
You may disagree with the rankings. You cannot disagree with the method because he puts in the legwork. As you mentioned, he is traveling around the country. He is seeing a lot of these guys live. It is legit the work that he puts in. And I know there are a lot of really good draft guides out there. Emory's is one that I make sure to pick up every single year. So I was able to get that. It launched on Monday. I picked it up. I am slowly scrolling through it while I'm sitting at home watching whatever on TV. But I would definitely suggest you get it. So looking forward to talking to Emory today about some of the things in the draft guide this year. In the meantime, though, we do have some news and rumors, things to dive into. And first one, I was sort of out of the loop a little bit this weekend. You know, had some stuff going on, and I saw your text, Laquan, about the Dolphins and Raheem Mostert agreeing on a new 2-year deal worth up to $9.075 million.
Let's go.
Look, this is coming off what was an amazing season for Raheem Mostert. I mean, he was an absolute beast. They also have a guy named Devon Achane, who was an absolute beast this past year. So I'm going to ask you first, Laquan, how bad is this for Achane's fantasy value that the Dolphins are re-upping with Raheem Mostert?
It's kind of bad just based on where Achane's ADP is right now, because you're taking a risk there, being that Raheem Mostert was the lead back there. And like, we all love Achane, how explosive he is. And when he gets the ball in his hand, he could take it to the crib at any place of the field. But like, Mostert is still there. He's still healthy. He's still playing at a top notch level for the age that he's at. I know he has a spotty history of injury, but I think Achane's a little too high right now for my price. So it definitely does take a step back, because you know Raheem Mostert's going to get all those goal line carries, all the red zone usage. So the touchdown upside is going to be there, versus where Achane will have to get his more of a 40-yard plus, you know, run, or a 70-yard plus catch, or whatever the case may be. But I think we need to draw back a little bit on Achane. But
I mean, Florio, for me, it just feels like Achane, we always talk about regression, right? The R word pops up whenever somebody has a big season. But in this case, he feels like a prime candidate for regression, because I just don't imagine he's going to average nearly 8 yards per carry next year. No. I mean, that is an insane number. I don't care how good you are. It just feels really, really impossible. And I do feel like people are sort of drafting him with the expectation that he remains as explosive and is just a big play waiting to happen. And I think there will be some there, but I keep coming back to 7.8 yards per carry. I mean, that just feels impossible to duplicate again next year.
Right. No way.
It is, because it was the best ever for anyone, for someone who had that many touches. So I'm not one in banking on history repeating itself and getting even better. And then I went and looked from week 3 on the usage. Mostert played more snaps, 52% to 43%. He had more carries, 118% to 84%. Targets went to Devon Achane, 30% to 21%. Achane, though, still had more yards. Mostert had 11 total touchdowns to Achane's 9. I think this is a backfield where both can coexist. I think it could be a lot like last season, where both weekly are battling for RB1 fantasy output, and then the other one could be like an RB2. The issue is, like Laquan was saying, Mostert's not going away, and everyone was pushing up Achane into top 10, some even into their top 5 running backs, because the thought was, even if his efficiency takes a bit of a hit, but if he is the lead guy in this backfield and could get over 200 touches, he could be the RB1, and I still think the upside is that high for Achane, but the financial investment shows that clearly Raheem Mostert is not going away, and you would need an injury to one of these two for the other to reach their full potential. And it looks like in fantasy right now, we're going to get a couple round discount, maybe even bigger, on Raheem Mostert. And as much as I like Achane, my approach tends to be, if it's a split backfield and you're going to give me a big discount on one, that's probably the one I'm more interested in.
So right now in best ball drafts, Devon Achane is the RB8.
Ouch.
Raheem Mostert is the RB25.
That's like in the 8th, 9th round, you're getting Mostert. That is such a huge blessing discount there. And like, we're not even talking about the possibility of injury with Achane. I mean, he came into the season hurt. He got hurt during the season, came back a little banged up. These are things that you have to factor in of spending a late 2nd round pick on a running back that is a smaller back. And we've seen these smaller backs. He's like 5'9", 185 pounds. Like, this isn't RB1 workload where he could take all these hits and take all these bangs. So right there, with Mostert coming back, an extension, like, they know what they're doing, you know, interchanging them both, because both have spotty injury history so far.
Yeah, I just, you know, I like Achane. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to continue to be productive. But like you said, Laquan, the draft price is way too rich for me right now. I suspect, because this news just came out not that long ago, I suspect that in the weeks to come, that gap is going to close quite a bit between Achane and Mostert. I think it's going to be more Achane coming down. Maybe Mostert moves up a little bit, but I think it's going to be more Achane coming down to meet him a little bit at this point.
But fantasy players love them some upside.
They do love some upside, man. They love upside and they love youth. And right now, that is, and speed, right. So all those things are an A-chance. Look, I mean, Mostert's got speed. He does not have youth on his side. A-chan checks all those boxes. So I sort of get why he is where he is. Staying in the state of Florida, in Jacksonville, Doug Peterson says, we have to get Tank Bigsby going, bottom line. That this year in their running game, they want to incorporate Bigsby a little bit more. Had a really good year last year in very, very limited I shouldn't say very good year. That's overstating it a little bit. Had some interesting plays, right? He started out well, had some fumbles, kind of got relegated to very few touches. Then by the end, I should say, was just kind of not really involved. But a guy that they do have expectations for. They want to sort of lessen the workload on Travis Etienne. Florio, I mean, I don't think anybody's suddenly going out and drafting Tank Bigsby all of a sudden, but does this mean we should be worried about Travis Etienne?
I don't think so. I always think it's better to deal with like the beast that you know. Let's see how the draft plays out for the Jags. But I thought coming out of free agency that Travis Etienne was one of the big winners because I was nervous of them bringing in another running back, and with so many available and on the move, not just the big name free agents, but there was a lot of trades and some quality lower level players that I thought maybe could come here and eat into ETN's workload. You look at what Tank Bigsby did last season, 50 carries for 132 yards, and he had just four targets. So he is not a threat at all to eat into those valuable, valuable targets. It's something we talk about a lot. A target is worth almost three times as much value in PPR as a single carry is to a running back. My only concern is goal line work, because last year, like you were saying, they did try early on to make Tank Bigsby the goal line back, but that didn't work, and ETN was better at it. So, yeah, they could say all they want that they got to get him going. And I do think he needs more than the 50 carries he had last year because you need someone to kind of take some work off of ETN's plate. But that could be a good thing because then he could be a little bit more fresh and a little bit more explosive. But yeah, I still am of the mindset that ETN, them not bringing in another running back and just riding with Tank Bigsby is best case scenario for him.
All right. So are you RB10 right now, LQ? Is that too high, too low? What are you feeling?
For Travis Etienne?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad at it. I mean, he was able to produce behind that terrible O-line. I mean, that's pretty much what kind of knocked Tank Bigsby as well with that 2.6 yards per carry. I mean, the Jaguars' run-blocking O-line was probably one of the worst. I mean, I know they were down there in the ranks at 31st. You know, Chargers were probably last as well. But I really feel as though if Travis Etienne was able to produce and get targets and get red zone usage, RB10's not bad. I'll take a shot at him at RB1.
Wow. All right. Yeah. I mean, I guess that would make him a low-end RB1 at this point. He was getting that sort of usage. This felt, you know, if we were playing hype train or smokescreen, I think I'm sort of with you, Florio. This feels more like a smokescreen. It feels like a thing that the Jaguars would like to do. Like, yeah, it'd be nice if we could get Tank Bigsby more involved. But I think, you know, when push comes to shove and we're in the heat of things, I don't know that it's actually going to happen, at least not in any real serious way, barring an injury or anything like that. In Cleveland, general manager Andrew Berry says the Browns are keeping a conservative approach with Nick Chubb's recovery. Laquan, Florio and I talked about this a little bit last week, but wanted to get your thoughts on this. Your expectations for Nick Chubb. I mean, right now he is the RB26. In fact, I believe he's just behind Raheem Mostert, one spot there. Your expectations for Nick Chubb coming off a major serious knee injury last year.
I like that they're being conservative, but, you know, if there was anybody on this planet that can come back as Superman and be ready to go, I think it would be Nick Chubb. So I like that I'm getting him in that 8th, 9th round. And you mentioned Mostert, like there was a real time draft I had on the plane. I'm like, I take Mostert here. Or do I take Chubb, you know, as my RB3? Like, I feel as though like this is a gift here because this is a guy we've seen come back, you know, not that he's come back, but a guy that is able to be a pure runner, a guy that is just running hard. And we see him in, you know, in fantasy formats where PPR, you know, he's not a guy that gets a bunch of targets, but he's still up there in the ranks. And I know we remember Adrian Peterson, you know, 2011, he came back from a torn ACL and put up 2000 yards. I think this could be a Nick Chubb. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel as though he is Superman and I'll take that blessing, you know, getting him in that 8th, 9th round.
I mean, we started saying that Adrian Peterson was a cyborg after that. I mean, I do wonder. I don't know if Nick Chubb is cyborg territory. I would love it. But as you pointed out, Flory, I mean, this is not his first major injury in his football career.
To this knee.
Goes back to college.
Yeah. So you do sort of wonder whether or not that's going to eventually have an impact. And especially this year, there are some other guys on this roster that can get opportunities, that can take some touches. So our fear is that they sort of bring him along slowly. They don't necessarily rush him back, which is great for his own health. It's bad for us in fantasy.
I don't know. Being patient is going to be hell.
my approach with Chubb is I'm going to root hard for him. I hope he can. Football is more fun when Nick Chubb is Nick Chubb, but it'll probably be on someone else's fantasy team.
Yeah. I think that's a fair way to go. Here's the thing. There are guys that, you know, you just sort of avoid drafting, or you don't draft a lot because there are just too many unknowns, too many questions. Like, there are plenty of guys that I will pass up and I'm like, you know what? If this guy succeeds somewhere else, good. Good on him. Good on the people that drafted him. It's the risk is not there for me, or I don't want to take that risk. So I get that.
Scared money don't make money.
All right.
But all right. He's gonna be on LQ's teams, not mine.
Right. No, but I'm gonna hold you to that, right? I'm gonna see once we get to the season, like, how much you've drafted Nick Chubb and how many spots you've drafted Nick Chubb. Your approach on drafting Nick Chubb. Because I assume obviously you're drafting him, what is like a third running back? Fourth running back?
Third running back, yeah. Kind of just waiting. I'm about to look at my exposure as we speak right now, how much I have him, because I might have too much.
So now he's already we're in early April and he's already like, yeah, I might have too much exposure to Nick Chubb.
Not bad. 33%.
33%?
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
That's probably 33% more than I'll have, but no, what's gonna happen is Nick Chubb will post a shirtless video of him cutting on grass in like June.
That'll do it.
People will go berserk.
His ADP is gonna shoot back up.
Yep.
That's right. You got to buy it now.
That's 100% what's going to happen. You know, because it always happens to us in the middle of the summer. Like, some guy posts a workout video and we're like, oh, and then we overdraft.
Remember Mike Davis? His quad.
Mike Davis, AJ Dillon.
These guys are the greatest athletes, the best at what they do in the world. Obviously, in shorts and no shirt, they're going to look amazing. I don't know why we continue to fall for this trap.
Every year we fall for the banana in the tailpipe. Yep. It is amazing.
I'm going to take absolutely the same amazing picture, and then my ADP is going to go down, though.
That would be funny if we just had fantasy analysts take those sorts of pictures and post those sorts of videos.
What they do? That should be our next skit this summer.
There if we go. You just get roasted across the internet, that'd be hilarious.
I'm down for it. Let's do it. Man.
Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Emory Hunt will join us to talk some prospects. Plus, you've probably heard by now, the Buffalo Bills made a big move and went down just as we were talking right now. So we will get to that a little bit later on in the show. We'll talk about Stephon Diggs leaving Buffalo. That's coming up after this here on the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like, check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or, like, put a sign in your yard, but...
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Well, I mentioned at the top of the show, this is always one of my favorite shows to do every year. It has become a tradition here on the NFL Fantasy Pod. We talked to Emory Hunt, the owner of the Football Game Plan, and it is because, well, one, he is awesome to talk to. He is very good at what he does, but also because his new scouting guide is out again for 2024. You can find him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. Emory, always enjoy talking to you. How is draft season going for you?
Listen, I appreciate y'all bringing me on and always showing support, and it is going by great. I'm done now with the draft guide, and now I'm ready to talk prospects because I know you guys are tired of talking about the same nine guys.
Right. Yeah, man, it's like it's been, you know, there's so many names that kind of keep coming up over and over again. But we part of the reason we like talking to you is because you do go a lot deeper. And we always talk about the fact that you will put us on to guys that either maybe we've never heard of or at least guys that we haven't talked about a whole lot. We always go back to the Tariq Cohen. I love the fact that you were bigger on Jahmyr Gibbs than I think a lot of people were. Both those things really panned out. Talk about your process, though. I mean, when you, because you are all, you're not just sitting down and watching tape. You are watching a lot of these guys in person. I mean, talk about your process and how you scout guys.
No, that's a great question because it starts in December because a lot of people may not know during the football season, the fall football season. And I have to preface that because people know I do cover the spring leagues and Canadian league and all that. But during the fall football season, I cover the NFL. I'm doing a pregame, postgame show for CBS Sports, and I call college games on the weekend. So I'm watching NFL games and calling college games and watching college football. So I don't jump into the draft until December when I start going to an all-star game. And the first one out the gate is the FCS Bowl, which is a smaller all-star game in Daytona Beach. It's a two-day event. So I go down there, check out prospects, and then all of January, I'm at the College Gridiron Showcase, the Hula Bowl, the Tropical Bowl, East-West Shrine Bowl. Then I'm at the Senior Bowl, and then in February, I go to both the NFL Combine and also the HBCU Legacy Bowl, which is the last all-star game of the circuit. So I go to all of these different all-star games, and those are my first times seeing guys live, which is great because we can't get fooled during the all-star game. Have a guy do a great job during this. If you do a great job out there in the all-star game circuit, you better do what you're doing out there on film. So I see those guys first before I go watch the film. Spend most of February and all of March just breaking down film. So my process starts in December and usually ends around March 28th.
Yeah, if you ever see a scout out there looking real dapper in a nice, usually bright-colored suit, money is it's Emory Hunt.
Oh, not on the all-star game, sir. You're going to see me in sweats and a hoodie because 9 times out of 10 these places where they at is cold. You know, you're going to see me bundled up. Like, but I'm out there, and it's cool to get out there and get out and seeing these guys personally.
The one all-star game they got rid of was out by us, Marcus, or we could have been doing this in person.
Yeah, right?
NFL PA Bowl. I hate that one. I hate that they got rid of it because that was, I used to come out to Pasadena, mm-hmm. and I loved it out there, man. It felt like the day never ended. You know what I'm saying? It's perfect.
Because especially in December, it's still, you know, 60 degrees and like the sun is out. It's like, you know, things are still good. Things are still good. I mean, let's talk about some of these guys. Just kind of dive into some of these because, you know, you go through the draft guide and you have these guys ranked and you give them a rating. One of the things that jumped out to me, Caleb Williams, your QB1. No surprise. Jaden Daniels at number 2. Not a big surprise there. Number 3 was Spencer Rattler. Who this was a guy that I know a couple years ago, he was at Oklahoma. He was a Heisman favorite. People thought he was going to do big things. He ended up losing his job to Caleb Williams. And, you know, people have sort of, I won't say down on him, but he's not getting the kind of love he did maybe 2-3 years ago. What is it about Spencer Rattler that you have locked in on?
The fact that you everything that you just mentioned, to me, that makes him a tougher, more pro-ready prospect, right? Because he has gone through some things. So let's say we're comparing Spencer Rattler to a J.J. MacArthur where everything has been sweet, right? And so, man, give me the dude that has, you know, kind of, and this is going to sound awful, but it makes sense. Give me the restaurant that has a D rating, because I know the food is slamming, right? I know the food is on point, right? So I know Spencer Rattler has been through some stuff, but I like that he's come out on the other side of it and has performed well. You talked about how he started. Everybody remember how great he was right out of the gate. Then he started to play inconsistent ball his second year, got, you know, benched for Caleb Williams, and Caleb Williams did great things right out of the gate. So it made Spencer look even worse. Then he goes to South Carolina, didn't play well until the last six games of 2022, where he pulled off those big upsets against Hendon Hooker at Tennessee. Then he knocked off Clemson. Then he did a great job versus Notre Dame. And then you saw him this year follow up with that. Despite not having the best offensive line play, he still was able to keep it together and play well. I've always said I thought he outplayed Drake May in that opener. Drake May and them won the game. But pound for pound, Spencer Rattler outplayed him in that game. So I feel like he is the perfect comparison probably for Spencer Rattler is what we see now from Baker Mayfield. So Baker Mayfield as a Buck is different than Baker Mayfield as a Brown. And I much rather Baker Mayfield the Buccaneer than Baker Mayfield the Brown or even the Panther. And I feel like because of what Baker has gone through, he is a much better quarterback now than he was then. And you want to see that progression, but I feel like that's been Rattler's MO, which is why I like him at three.
You have Jordan Travis right behind him at number four. And Travis got injured and it killed FSU's chances of making the national championship. It also seemingly has taken him out of the conversation to be one of the top quarterbacks here. But is he being overlooked due to his injury?
Absolutely. People are big on what they last seen. That's why whoever's pro day is today is going to be the best quarterback in the class, right? So last week it was Penix week. The week before that was J.J. McCarthy and then so on and so forth, right? So people are you know, married to what they saw last. And I feel like if he had the chance to go through the postseason in college and also the postseason All-Star game, probably would have been a Senior Bowl guy. He was at the East-West Shrine Bowl just doing interviews and he would have thrown at the combine. People would have saw the athleticism and remember that this dude is a really good football player, plays a lot like Russell Wilson did at NC State. But because he got hurt and they think his leg got amputated, they just forget that he is a really good athletic quarterback that he broke. They got better. He still has two legs. So he's going to be fine. And talking with him at the combine, he talked about how he got better as a passer over the course of his career, which is, again, what you want to see for someone that was used to wonder whether or not he was going to end up as a quarterback earlier in his career. Like, I don't know, man, this guy is tough out there to where you need him out there to win games for you. You can't win without Jordan Travis. That tells you a lot of how he progressed and what I think about him as a pro prospect.
I love that description because they've always, the selection committee did talk about Jordan Travis as though he lost a leg. it was wild. J.J. McCarthy is a guy who has been a big, big riser up a lot of draft boards. I mean, people talking about him maybe possibly moving up into the top five or six overall at this point. What is driving this hype and is it for real with McCarthy?
It's the quarterback tax, man. And listen, if there's one person you blame for all this, it's Kirk Cousins, right? You know what I'm saying? If you go back to Kirk Cousins in Washington, he is the reason why all of these quarterbacks are getting paid as if they are Patrick Mahomes. But shout out to Kirk Cousins for getting everybody paid. But I'm saying, you know, when you look at people thinking that, oh, we need a guy. And, well, Cousins, you know, the stats look nice. You know, 28 touchdowns, 4 picks. Yeah, but he took like 75 sacks. He had like 75 fumbles that killed drives. But the touchdown interception ratio is going to always look great because there's a lot of empty calories. And I'm not saying J.J. McCarthy is Kirk Cousins. I'm saying because people are so desperate to make a quarterback a savior, they push guys up. When what you should do is quarterback-proof your roster to where a guy can come in and just be a part of the wheel, be a piece of the puzzle, like Brock Purdy. Based off everything that we've seen from Brock Purdy and everything that we know right now from Brock Purdy, you're still not taking Brock Purdy in the top five of an NFL draft, right? because you know Brock Purdy is a piece of the puzzle. So I feel like J.J. McCarthy is a good piece of the puzzle. Now, I'm not going to knock him for his throws because I like it how people used to knock option quarterbacks. Like, oh, he only threw the ball 12 times. He can't really throw. Like, yeah, but think about how significant those 12 passes had to be. Like, if we're only asking you to throw 15 times, you better connect on 12 of those 15. And that's what McCarthy was able to do. And so he protects the football. He keeps the offense on pace. He's a good athlete, so he can get out there and scramble and run and pick up those cheap first downs. He's a good player. I think he's more of a second-round type pick, but we know the NFL is desperate for those heroes, so they're going to push everybody. All those quarterbacks are going to go up in the first round.
Look, Tom Brady might be the GOAT, but Kirk Cousins is the GOAT at getting paid, and that's what really matters. Looking over the guide, Emery, like, I know you're not a huge fan of Bo Nix, stuff like that, but how many quarterbacks do you think we could see get drafted in the first round this year?
Oh, probably six. Because you talk about the four, you know, and May, McCarthy, Daniels, and Caleb, and you got Penix in there, and, you know, there's this Bo Nix hype, too, because he started a lot of games. And if you look at, if you're going to look at Penix as a Washington Husky, as opposed to Indiana Hoosier, you got to look at Bo Nix as an Oregon Duck, as opposed to an Auburn Tiger. And so they've had two separate careers. So I could see six going in round one because of, hey, man, what we saw from Bo Nix, he got us, Oregon was in every game. He made some great plays off script. He's a good athlete. And we know that he can help drive the offense, right? Same with Penix. And I feel like at some point in time, if you're not going to be at the top 10 portion of the draft, you don't want to trade up draft capital. And that most important part of the first round that has, as of today, you know, the Vikings, Broncos, and Raiders, that's what, 11, 12, and 13? That's an integral part where you may see those three guys go to those teams.
Yeah, I think this goes back to your thing about the quarterback tax, right? Everybody feeling like they got to get the guy to the point that maybe they start reaching for some guys, and maybe that pulls a guy or two up where he probably wouldn't have been otherwise. I want to ask you about running backs, because this class hasn't gotten a ton of love. And I was sort of going back and looking at it. And I look back at like some of the more recent classes where there have been one or two really big stars and some other guys who look like contributors at the NFL level. Is it that this class is really just not great, or is it just that they don't have the top heaviness that we've seen in recent RB classes?
I think the latter is so true. Everyone is looking for, you know, the explosive home run hitter that can be out there every down. But that's not this class. It's not to say that they don't have guys that can hit the home run or that can be every down backs. But you want to see it combined for two, like we saw last year with, you know, a Jahmyr Gibbs or a Bijan Robinson, right? But there's guys that can end up being starters based off how they play. Like a Braylon Allen, to me, could be a starter. And if you want to get specific, could be a starter in Dallas, right? He could be that bell cow that they need. You look at Denver. Denver has a bunch of backs. They need someone that you can trust to be that lead dog, in their backfield. Or you look at a lot of the other guys, hey, man, like we need someone that can come in and provide a Keaton Mitchell spark or come in and provide a spark in terms of, hey, we need speed and explosiveness on the field. There's a bunch of those guys. So I feel like this draft has a great chance for a team to improve their RB2, their RB3, and maybe a specialist in terms of guys that can help you out in a return game as well.
And how much Jonathan Brooks, he suffered the injury last year. Would he have been ranked higher by you had he not suffered that injury? And what kind of impact do you think he can make in the NFL?
You know, I like Brooks. I do feel like for Brooks, for me, it was a balance issue where I felt like he was getting tipped over too often. It's almost like he had a clumsy running style, like Jeremy Langford, or how he used to run, where, you know, he's a long-legged guy where you're running and you don't have a good center of gravity and somebody come hit you on the hip and you topple over. I felt like he also, you know, needed to be a little bit more patient behind the line of scrimmage. That's why I thought Baxter was a more well-rounded back at Texas as opposed to Brooks. So I like Brooks, but I feel like Brooks is someone that's kind of like how Latavius Murray runs, where, you know, you see him running tall and get toppled over a little bit. You know, doesn't really have the balance. So I feel like that's where Brooks is for me. We wouldn't have been RB1. I feel like Allen, because of his youth, his footwork, and his ability to really still get better. You know, he's like 15 years old, right? Because he started college very early. Like, he was such a young player. And so he got a lot more runway to work with and still has more upside left in his game.
You mentioned Latavius Murray and our friend and colleague Adam Rank once said Latavius Murray runs like a door, and that's an image that has always stuck with me, just him running just upright like a door. That's the point. Marshawn Lloyd, look, everybody who listens to the show knows that I am a USC homer. I love to see the SC guys succeed, and he was a guy that I thought kind of got misused a little bit last year as they really put a lot on Caleb Williams. You made the comp to Aaron Jones, which I think is great. How do you see him kind of fitting into the next level?
I think he's Aaron Jones-like in terms of how fluid he is as a runner. I think he could be someone's starter. And it was funny watching him, because when you're watching him play, maybe it's the USC uniform, but I felt like he was 5'11", 225. Right. And he measured it, and I'm like, wow, he's that small? Like, wow, that's crazy. But he runs. He just has a good natural running style. He can catch the ball well out of the backfield. He's a little bit too impatient as well, too. You'll see him like run up the back of a lineman, a little bit too hesitant to get to the hole. And sometimes it'll work out for him. You go watch the Colorado game. He kind of ran up the back of a lineman, but then reverse field and then went back and scored like a 40-yard touchdown run on that play. And granted, it's Colorado defense, like, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But you saw, like, the ability to make something out of nothing. And I like the fact that he is someone that was good at South Carolina, transferred to USC, got the starting job, and still played well. So I feel like he is someone, I hate to use the term sleeper for a dude that is played at USC and went to the senior bowl and at the combine. No one is talking enough about Marshawn Lloyd.
Yeah. He is one that I feel like as we get closer and closer has been getting a little bit more hype, but still not enough. And Emery, you said you're sick of talking about the same nine players all the time. Everyone has been talking Marvin Harrison Jr. for years now, but not only is he not your wide receiver one, you have Keon Coleman and Jermaine Burton over him. So I'm sure people, when they look at the guy, that jumps out to them. What is it that you like about those two over Marvin Harrison?
Explosiveness. And here's the thing, man. People just think, and we work in media. We work for major networks and outlets. Not once in a production meeting has anyone said, hey, do this for clicks, right? Not once has it ever come up. You know what I'm saying? So I'm telling you what I feel and what I've seen, right? And how I view it. When you watch those other receivers play, it's hard to ignore the explosiveness. And, you know, and that's the biggest aspect of today's game at receiver. Because, yes, you want to drop back, seven-step drop, good protection, and launch a deep ball to a big, tall wide receiver. Football isn't played that way anymore. So you got to be able to take this hitch and go 70 yards. Those guys, Burton, Neighbors, Adunze, even Coleman, people sleep on his elusiveness as a runner. Those guys can create after the catch. Not saying Marvin Harrison can't, but those guys do it in a more explosive manner than does Marvin Harrison Jr., who's a very good receiver. We know he's going to be an insane red zone threat. But in terms of creating your own shot, you got to work better off bump press. And he has to find ways to create separation, because NFL defensive backs will be in his hip pocket consistently.
I mean, if things get bad for Marvin Harrison Jr., I know he's got a guy he can call, he can lean on for experience and some pointers and if money. It comes down to it. And a little bit of cash if he needs some spending money. I don't think that part's going to be a problem for him at any point. Xavier Worthy is a guy who blew everybody away with his 40 time at the combine. People love his speed. They love his explosiveness. People are worried about his size. How does all that factor in? Is the 40 time overblown, or is there something really there with Worthy?
There's something really there. People look at the 40 and forget the film. Like, I could have told you he was fast. Like, watching how he just flew past, you know, Bama's secondary. And it was great about this year's Bama game, because last year watching him versus Bama, you felt like he was a double agent. Like, bro, like, let me check your DraftKings account. You know what I'm saying? Because why are you dropping these wide open passes? But this year, did a great job getting underneath the reception, making some big plays. So I felt like he was a little bit more consistent this year in catching the football. So his speed is evident. He can get deep. He's not just a fast guy that you put out there. He is someone that's a legit receiver that can work himself open. I think he's a little bit better than Hollywood Brown was as a prospect, according to my grading scale. And I feel like that's something that has value. So yeah, he could play inside. He could play outside as a Z receiver. But he's not just a fast guy that you just throw out there. He's a legit football player that just happens to be Olympic type fast. Don't let him go to Miami.
It's funny you mentioned Marquise Brown, because I keep saying that Worthy to me just feels like he was born to play on the Chiefs. Like, give Patrick Mahomes that weapon. Good luck the rest of the NFL. But this class, Emery, not only does it have a ton of high-end talent, it's deep as well. So who are some, because look, Emery scouts 1,000 players every year. So who are some of the deeper wide receiver, the diamond in the rough type prospects that you have your eye on?
Well, I say this in jest, right? Because people love to, like, the propaganda is out there, right? So people will sit there and say, yeah, he comes from a small school, Colorado. Like, you know, they try to limit small schools to anything not SEC or Pac-12, right? No, I'm not going to let people get away with that. But I will say this. Xavier Weaver of Colorado is a really good receiver. No one's talking about. Fantastic receiver. He works himself open consistently. Great hands. And he was Shador Sanders, who was QB1 for 2025. He was working himself open. It was his favorite target for Sanders. Consistently open. Now, if you want to go deeper, you know, you talk about guys that will be these fan favorites come, you know, spring and summer. How about John Giles of West Florida, 6'2", 202, the Argonauts, elite leaping ability. I was at the College Gridiron Showcase, and this is in Fort Worth, Texas. So this is first week of January, like the 6th through the 9th. So we're talking like 40 degrees with wind. So it's cold out there. And he's out there just like it's a 75 degree day, just fluid, smooth. Bacon DBs all day, and got a call up late to the Hula Bowl the following week and performed really well there on a short notice against FBS defensive backs consistently, right? Then you saw Kyle Sheets, a receiver from Slippery Rock, 6'2", 222. He ran at his pro day recently. He was at the Temple's pro day. He ran like low 4 or high 4.4, low 4.5, but for someone at 6'2", 222, That's very good. He's able to win off the line of scrimmage. He can stack defensive backs, which means he keeps that separation between him and the defender where it needs to be. He can track the ball well deep down the field. Plays a lot like Puka Nacua, you know. So that's a name that people kind of recognize. But this dude plays
this year's Puka.
This year's Puka. Heard it here first. When you see the clip come out, you know, because we all had the meeting. You guys said say something for clicks, right? So. but he's a good one. And there's these two Division III guys I always want to bring up, because it's funny when you watch Division III players and you see the guys just do things on the field that you don't see from other guys, right? You're like, all right, is this guy fast or is he D3 fast, right? But then he gets then the kid Cole Burgess from Cortland. I watched the Division III National Championship game. And it was Cortland versus North Central out of Illinois. And they both had elite level receivers. Now, I knew about D'Angelo Hardy, who kind of stylistically reminds me of Andre Reed, how he's a catch and run guy. He's 6 feet, 195, fluid athlete, fantastic receiver. I want to say he had like 200 yards receiving in that game. And they were going score for score. But Burgess, I'm watching Burgess's game, his regular season games, before I watched the championship game. I'm like, is this dude legitimately, did he do something to his highlight tape or his tape where he threw like two times fast forward? Because the separation is insane. Like, and he ran a 4.4 40 at University of Buffalo's pro day, but he's another one that's a deep ball type guy. He's going to be a Z receiver. He can fly down the field. And both of those guys were going back and forth. You want to see guys stand out. You want to see their speed translate. So those small school guys, even from the Division III level, really stood out consistently. I didn't see any All-Star games for both guys, but so you have to trust the tape and trust that their athleticism translates. But for Sheets and Giles, those dudes have the goods.
So as I go through mock drafts looking at them, generally I see anywhere 6, 7, maybe 8 wide receivers in the first round getting drafted. Do you think we get that many? Could it be more?
That, you know what's funny about that is I feel like there's going to be, we all know there's a run that starts in the draft. Mm-hmm. And we expect quarterbacks to go 1, 2, 3, right? Maybe even 4 if somebody trades up. But wherever the first receiver or first tackle is taken, expect the next 5 to be receiver or tackle, right? So I do feel like we'll get 6 receivers, especially what Buffalo just did, you know, in terms of like, you know, we can lock Buffalo in for 1. But I feel like with the elite level top end talent that we have in this year's class, people were in line when it says a deep receivers class. It really is. And you expect at least 5 to 6 receivers because there's a variety of types of guys. There's tall guys that can run, shorter guys that can run, guys on both sides of the spectrum that can catch and run. And so it's a great class to get wide receivers. I would say it's probably going to look like 2014, in my opinion.
Hmm. So 6 or 7 in round 1. I'm thinking by the end of night 2, we're probably going to have like 15 off the board, maybe.
Well, if teams buy the guy, they'd see we have like 80 to go through. We can get draft receivers all night. You know what I'm saying? Like, Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina is another one that's really doggone good. There's a bunch of explosive talents that we'll see going round 2 is where we may see the same number replicate in round 2.
A lot of Xavier's in this draft. Xavier Worthy, Xavier Weaver, Xavier.
Very popular Leggett. Name around that 2000-2001 era.
Apparently was.
Before we let you go, I know I asked for some deeper wide receiver prospects, but you go 88 quarterbacks deep. You go hundreds total players deep. Every year, there's like we were saying, Tariq Cohen, there's always a couple of guys that you were just higher on that most of the public hasn't even heard of. So I'm wondering who is that player or maybe a couple of players for you this year?
I give you a quarterback that no one's talking about, man. I was watching as I'm grading QBs. And I'm like, you know, I see a guy name and I'm just like, all right, he's a senior. And, all right, let me add him in the guide, right? Because there's an ego involved. I got to have a lot of, you know, prospects graded, right? So let me add some more guys to this list. I don't want to cut it off at, you know, 60. Let me find 28 more guys, right? But I'm grading Illinois and I'm like, yo, this dude, John Paddock, is pretty doggone good. Like, he got in because the starter got hurt. Altmaier, I think his name is, got hurt. And Paddock was the backup, came in, and was lighting up defenses. I'm like, why is this dude awesome? And why wasn't he at an All-Star game? And so I think he's like Brock Purdy. So I think he's going to be this year's Brock Purdy. John Paddock, quarterback out of Illinois. And in terms of running back situation, we talked about Marshawn Lloyd. I will bring up Marcus Knight out of Tennessee Tech. And this is another one that just kind of like randomly popped up on my radar. And because he didn't play in the All-Star game. But I was like, man, I've heard this dude name before. Now I remember, oh, yeah, this is the dude that started at Montana. That was nice. He was nice at Montana. He's 6 feet, 222 pounds. Kind of reminds me a lot of Tim Hightower. But then he left football at Montana and played lacrosse at Montana. And I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. So, you know, he has the athleticism. Then he goes to Tennessee Tech and they run a tri-back system. But when he was getting the football, it was like, OK, this dude clearly is running with a purpose. He's running, finding lanes. So he is someone that's going to end up on, you know, a priority free agent type deal and have a fun camp or something that will end up making a roster, probably Baltimore, you know, and to be one of these backs that we talk about. That no one has talked about that in midseason. Who the hell is Marcus Knight? Well, there he is. But and just to throw out there, a defensive guy, because I know this is fantasy, but I got to throw out a defensive guy.
Sure.
But, Antonio Efano, if the name sounds familiar, he was the 5-star number one recruit in the nation that went to Alabama, went to a couple of practices and then left the team. And Nick Saban was like, well, he just quit, right? And so he just transferred to another school, Penn State, and then transferred to another school, then didn't play anywhere, then ended up at Lackawanna Community College. He's still a five-star recruit playing at Lackawanna, and his tape looks like that, where he's just like this dude is a legit NFL player playing against JUCO talent. And, you know, he's 6'4", 275, that no one is talked about. His pro day is coming up, and he's going to test through the roof. But he is someone that if you see him get drafted on day three, don't think it's an error, you know, that a guy gets drafted from Lackawanna Community College. But you got to follow the athletes, and this dude is insanely athletic.
I was going to ask you, like, real quick, how much harder is this now with the transfer portal and guys moving everywhere the way they do?
So hard, man. There's so many times during this grading process where I wanted to throw my laptop and everything out the window. I'm like, I'm like, you grade a guy, then you like you go online as the, you know, you Twitter search his name, is like, you know, he has long tweets like, yeah, I committed to, like, bro, what you mean you committed? I just graded your film, like you got another year. Like, so it's hard. So I'm glad we're getting back to, I think this might be the last year, because you got freshmen that started in 2021, so they don't get that COVID year. That's the thing that I think we're now going to get back to. If you're a senior, you're a senior. And I'm glad. Because
the COVID guys, I mean, you got like 25. There's the tight end that's legit going to be kicked off his parents' health insurance by the time he reaches the NFL. Like, that has to make it harder.
I tell you what, man. You know who is notoriously known for this? And I noticed this during the process. And I'm going to call them out. Even though I like the program, they're a very good program at the Division II level. They won that championship a couple years ago. Ferris State. Like, so I'm grading the DN, and I'm like, oh, this dude nice, man. Like, you know, athletic, well put together. Then I go and, you know, as you see how the guide is set up, it has a section for career accolades. All right, let me go put in the stats at the bottom. And I scrolled, I don't know what, maybe scrolled down to his birthday, and it was like 96. I'm like, hold on, dog. Like, let me do the math right quick. Like, what are you doing? Of course you're growing up. You're a grown man out there. Like, then the quarterback who I was like, oh, it's cool. Malik Mitchell finally got an opportunity to start, you know, at quarterback. He bought his time behind Jarrett Bernhardt, who was 29 years old. He was a lacrosse dude that played at Maryland. And so he ended up with the Falcons. I'm like, cool. Malik Mitchell got his opportunity. He stayed there, stayed the course, led them to the playoffs. And I'm looking at his birthday. I'm like, bro, you got to be kidding me. Like, he was born in 97, 98. And he's right now starting quarterback for a team in the indoor football league. So he knew the NFL process wasn't even going to make his way. It's like, Ferris State, stop with these old players, man. Like,
oh, man, that's great. Emery, as always, dude, we appreciate the time. We appreciate the insight. I put it out on Twitter that your draft guide is a must purchase for me every year. For folks, though, who don't know, where can they find it?
footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. It's the only place you can find it. If I catch one of y'all hitting me up saying, yo, I'll sell you stuff on Amazon, we fighting because somebody's selling on the black market. But go to footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. It's a PDF file, so don't hit me up saying, "Oh, you know, you didn't ship me my book." Like, bro, I would charge you $1,000 for this level of insight, right? So it's a PDF, full color. It's an easy read. It's useful information. Like, you don't really need all the wordiness of a scouting report. What can he do? Where can he get better? How does he fit? What he did in college? It's all right there in bullet points.
Yeah, I love it 100%. I do. Like, it's compact. It's concise. It has everything you need to know. Everybody is just one page. It's, you mentioned, full color. It's beautiful. I highly recommend that the folks go out and go check this thing out. Emery, as always, dude, we appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of draft season. I know you're out promoting the book, man. But enjoy the rest of draft season. We will definitely talk again soon.
I need to slap New York Times bestseller on top of it so I can, you know, yeah. I try to feel important. You know?
Absolutely. I'm totally with
you. We got to make that happen. Let's push that now.
Let's make that happen, dude. Yeah, man. But enjoy draft season, dude. We'll catch up.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll take a quick break. Come back. Talk some Stephon Diggs. He's got some new digs down there in Houston. Talk about that next on the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
Well, the big news happening as we were starting the show and could not go without talking about it, and that is the Bills trading Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. In return, they get a second round pick in 2025. So, Florio, I mean, you are here. I'm sure you are in your feelings. Your initial thoughts on Stephon Diggs no longer being in Western New York?
I hate it. I hate it. I think Bills fans are going through it right now. A lot of them have been tweeting me and saying stuff that I've been saying for a while now. Like, he declined under Joe Brady. He averaged 43 yards per game under Joe Brady. No denying that. His worst month statistically every year since he's been a Buffalo Bill is December. He's in the playoff games where the Bills have been eliminated, he's largely been held in check. I said after their loss to the Chiefs this year that I actually have doubts for the first time about if Diggs is the answer for wide receiver one. So I would be okay moving on if it just came at a better, like, to me, it's the fact that they're eating nearly $30 million in dead cap, that they're giving up two additional draft picks, and they're just getting a second round pick next year. Every free agent that could make an impact has already found a home. They're kind of putting all their eggs in the basket of trying to replace him via the draft. I don't think they have enough firepower, though, to get one of the big three wide receivers. And we know Emory Hunt loves Keon Coleman and Jermaine Burton, and there's other names out there that they can get, but I believe when you have a 28-year-old quarterback that I truly believe is a top two quarterback walking the planet, at worst, he's top four, your goal every year is how can we get as best suited as possible to win a Super Bowl? And I think the Bills are right now further from the Super Bowl than they were 24 hours ago.
I mean, I think they are as well. The problem is I don't see them trading up, right? I mean, here it is. They have given up a lot this offseason, right? They trade Stephon Diggs. They've lost Gabe Davis. They've lost some stuff along the offensive line. If anything, they need to be trying to acquire more draft capital, trying to acquire more assets that way. And I don't think they're in a position really to be giving up draft assets to move up, even to get one of the top level wide receivers. I guess the good news is that because this draft is deep, there's likely going to be somebody there for them at number 28. And at some point, they're going to have to make a move to fill one of those gaps now because you have lost your top two wide receivers. I don't remember who I saw tweeted. I'm sorry for not remembering, but none of the wide receivers from the 13-second game are there anymore. They're all gone.
You know how many yards? Stephon Diggs had in that 13-second game?
Mm.
Seven. So, yeah, that it hurts. But the thing is, he is, as a long-time suffering Bills fan, he is the best wide receiver they've ever had since I've started watching them, and that goes back over 20 years, so...
All right, so let's talk about this fantasy-wise, though, right?
Yeah.
Let's just start in Buffalo, because Josh Allen has sort of been the undisputed QB1 for a while now, but now he doesn't have Gabe Davis. He doesn't have Stephon Diggs. Yes, he does have Dalton Kincaid and James Cook, Khalil Shakir. Is he and he can still run. Is he still the QB1?
I think it's an incomplete right now as to who their wide receiver one is. If they go out and make a trade for a different veteran wide receiver that is rumored to be out there or something like that, then maybe I feel a little bit different about it. But I kind of spoke about this on the cheat sheet last week. Like, I've had Josh Allen as QB1 in fantasy for years now, but under Joe Brady, the passing numbers went down, and it was like less than 240 passing yards per game, less than 2 passing touchdowns per game. He was heavily reliant on the running and the rushing touchdowns, and you're not going to get 15 rushing touchdowns out of your quarterback all the time. So I do think this opens up the window. Like, for me, before this move, I was very much so Allen is one, even though I think there's a conversation. Now, if you want to put Hurts or Lamar or Mahomes, I might argue it, but I understand the logic. And to me, though, those are the big four quarterbacks. And I know I say stuff like this a lot. You could jumble them up in any sort of order, and it probably feels like you'll still make a right decision.
I mean, for me at this moment, Jalen Hurts is probably my QB1 with the passing weapons he has, with his ability to run the football. We'll see if he still has the touchdown upside, if they're still using the brotherly shove at the goal line. They add Saquon Barkley, which is another weapon out of the backfield who can run and catch the football. On paper, this is a loaded, loaded offense. So right now, he's my QB1. I do reserve the right to change my mind based on what happens with Buffalo over the next couple of months. But I don't know that I can put Josh Allen up there. I still think I'm with you. He's one of the top four. I would probably, my gut feeling is to have him at 3 to go with Jalen Hurts, then Lamar, then Josh Allen. It's a close 3. I mean, because Mahomes is definitely there too now that they've added Hollywood Brown. So there's a lot there. On the other side, well, I guess let's stay with Buffalo here first. Pass catching. I mean, I've seen a lot of people already putting Dalton Kincaid as a top 5 tight end. Does that sit okay with you?
I think it sits okay with me, but that is top 5, like tight end 5 would be the absolute highest I'd be willing to put him, because I mean, I'm not willing to put him over Sam Laporta, Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, and I think Trey McBride still comfortably sits ahead of him. But after that, I mean, it's like, it's Kincaid, Pitts, Kittle, like that is the second tier of tight ends. So yeah, right now, out of all of those secondary options, volume is in Kincaid's favor, I would say.
I mean, I think so, right? I mean, they don't have any wide receivers that are going to threaten him. Sure, James Cook will get targets, but not enough to really make a big, big impact. You know, I'm sort of looking. I mean, we don't have a healthy TJ Hawkinson to start the year. George Kittle, his overall numbers look fine, but the week to week is going to be up and down with so many things going on in San Francisco. Maybe so. I mean, I love Dalton Kincaid coming out of Utah. I know you love Dalton Kincaid when they drafted him. He sort of had Dawson Knox kind of in his way a little bit. Seems like they've cleared the deck. So maybe just volume alone sort of gets him in that situation. On the Houston side, is CJ Stroud a top 5 fantasy quarterback now?
I don't think he goes in that tier 1, which we just said was those other 4, Allen, Hurts, Jackson, Mahomes, whatever order you want to put him in. To me, CJ Stroud comes in as QB5. But I put him in the same tier. It's a short tier for me as of right now of this second quarterback one. It's Stroud, Joe Burrow, Anthony Richardson. I think you could mix those guys up. Maybe you could make a case for like a Dak or a Kyler or Jordan Love to join them. But to me, those are the 3 that, while they're not quite as proven or as high of a ceiling, I would say, as those the top 4 because of what those 4 give you with their legs, Anthony Richardson could give you a ton with their legs. Joe Burrow and CJ Stroud have the capability of just going off as passers and giving you 4,500 passing yards and 35 passing touchdowns. So, and with Stroud, the reason I would put him over Burrow is because there's less injury concern. Like, love Joe Burrow when he's out there on the field, but having him be on the field has been an issue in two of the last three seasons or two of the last four seasons. So, because of that and the youth on CJ Stroud's side, I'm going to go with him. But whew, good luck figuring out that Texans wide receiver room.
That's the next thing, right? Because now they've got Nico Collins. They're going to have Tank Dell healthy at some point. They've got Stephon Diggs. They've got Dalton Schultz at the tight end spot. They added Joe Mixon, who, you know, maybe not a huge pass catcher. Nobody's going to confuse him with, you know, Christian McCaffrey, but can offer something out of the backfield. It's going to be one of those things where on a week-to-week basis, we thought it was frustrating last year trying to figure out Collins and Dell. It's going to be even more frustrating now that you have a third guy in the mix. Yes, even with a, you know, if you believe that Stephon Diggs is diminished, which is a fair criticism, right? Even if you believe that, it's still going to be really, really hard to figure out. The other thing for me, and this applies to both the pass catchers and to Stroud himself, how much more passing volume can this offense have? Because Stroud threw the ball almost 500 times last year, right? That was, you know, top 15 in terms of pass attempts. Sure, maybe that number goes up a little bit, but now you potentially have a more consistent running game with Joe Mixon there. How much more passing volume does he have? Can he spread the ball around to, I won't say support. Well, I mean, can he support four pass catchers, right? Can he support the three wide receivers and a tight end? That part to me gets a little bit dicey. Can he support all those guys on a regular basis? And even as good as his rookie season was, I'm just not sure if there's enough volume right now.
Yeah, and the thing is, Steph Diggs, 4 years in a row, has been a 100-catch receiver, 150-plus targets, and he's very vocal. He's not going to go somewhere and suddenly become the third option in the passing game. So I think that all three will be heavily involved. I am excited to dive a little bit deeper once we finish this up and see the usage and everything for all three. But you look at like Tank Dell, for example, he had two games last year with more than six catches. Like, Nico Collins was a big play merchant as well. And that's what makes this offense so much fun, is they didn't need a ton of volume because CJ Stroud arguably was the best deep ball passer last year, that it was, it, you weren't banking on Dell or Nico Collins to get you six, seven, eight catches every week, and that's how you get your points. You were like, give me these 50-yard touchdowns. That's what I want. And I don't think that's Diggs' strong point. It was a big issue, actually, down the stretch. Him and Allen couldn't get on the same page. Some were on Allen, some were on Diggs with, when it came to the not being able to connect on the deep ball. But I think Diggs now suits in as your possession guy. He's going to be your chain mover. He's probably going to lead you in targets most weeks, whereas those other guys are going to be the big play ones. I keep thinking about it, and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, they're all probably will settle somewhere in like a wide receiver two range, maybe like 15 to 24, and maybe a little bit, spread that out a little bit more. But week to week is going to be, if everyone stays healthy, it's probably going to be frustrating.
It's going to be really, really frustrating, but it's going to be fun to watch. And I know we've said this before, I will say it again. Jacksonville's perceived reign atop the AFC South looks like it's going to be way shorter than any of us had ever anticipated, because the Texans are loaded, especially on the offensive side.
I said it today. You could tell me if I'm crazy. I think right now the Texans should have higher Super Bowl odds than the Bills.
I don't think that's crazy. Not at this moment. Again, you know, we'll see what happens by the time draft season is over and we get to the start of the year. But for right now, I don't think that's crazy at all. Problem for all those teams, the AFC is loaded and the two-time defending champs are on that side of the ledger. So we will see what happens. In the meantime, good spot for us to take a break. For the week, for the day. We'll be back with you, of course, on Thursday for the cheat sheet. Be sure to check that out. And again, thanks to Emery Hunt. Be sure to go check out his draft guide at footballgameplan.com. In the meantime, that'll do it for this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Stay happy, safe, and healthy. Do good and live well. Enjoy the week. Good luck with your wide receiver rankings, everybody. And we will talk to you again real soon.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.